What? What? What?
I know how we can run everybody out of Rock Ridge.
How?
We'll kill the firstborn male child in every household.
Too Jewish.
Shalom and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is singer, director, playwright, actress, and writer Eleanor Risa, author of The Letters Project, A Daughter's Journey. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. It's Super Bowl Sunday today, a contemporary American holiday that has certainly surpassed most of the others on our calendar in actual observance. More people celebrate Super Bowl Sunday by having a party to watch the game, drink beer, and overeat than actively celebrate President's Day or Labor Day or Martin Luther King Jr. Day or Memorial Day or, well, almost any other day. In all likelihood, Super Bowl Sunday is the third most observed American festival after Thanksgiving and the 4th of July, and slightly ahead of Christmas and Valentine's Day tomorrow, which have some limitations on their popularity. After all, while there are lots and lots of Christians in the U.S., the current figure is just 65% of the total population, so not everybody celebrates it. And Valentine's Day really doesn't work if you don't have a date or are too young or too old or too wise to care about a holiday invented by greeting card candy companies, the Amalgamated Union of Florists, and the jewelry cartels. Oh, and the restaurateurs of America, of course. So Super Bowl Sunday is a bigger American holiday in its own highly commercialized way. And so to start things today, on that theme, kind of, here's Rabbi Joe Black singing his delightful Valentine's Day is not a Jewish holiday, unlike, you know, Super Bowl Sunday.
Valentine's Day is not a Jewish holiday. That's why I didn't buy you flowers. I was thinking just of you. I know you're proud to be a Jew. It's a most confusing 24 hours. No, I can't be what I ain't, and a day named for a saint doesn't seem to be a kosher celebration. Oh, but when Purim comes, we'll nash on special heart-shaped Hamantaschen and drink Mulligan David wine for our libation. It's a Hallmark holiday, that is all that I can say. I don't know why you think it's so essential. Besides, at 80 bucks a pop, a dozen roses ain't so high. What's the point of getting oh so sentimental? No, I didn't buy Godivas, 'cause the increase in your dress sizes from eating chocolate makes you weep and makes you wail. So open up the bedroom door, don't make me sleep here on the floor. I'll buy perfume for you next week when it's on sale.
That was my friend Rabbi Joe Black singing about Valentine's Day. Now, back to today and the festival of Super Bowl Sunday. While we on Too Jewish usually highlight the Jewish players who have a connection to the Super Bowl itself, you know, a Jewish offensive lineman or kicker or the rare Jewish star like MVP Julian Edelman a couple of Super Bowls ago, or the Jewish owners or executives or coaches, well, this year we're going to go in a different direction. This year, my hometown LA Rams have returned to the Super Bowl after a 3-year break, and they are playing the underdog Bengals of Cincinnati, which just happens to be my 95-year-old dad's hometown. That means that this year's Super Bowl represents a rabbi versus rabbi showdown. We'll celebrate that climactic confrontation at a Super Bowl squares party at my congregation, Beit Simcha, with the usual Super Bowl fare. Appetizers, kosher hot dogs, all the fixings, beverages, a Super Bowl squares competition, and more. It's about as Jewish as a Super Bowl can get these days. Should be lots of fun. Now, you should know my allegiance to the LA Rams goes back to my days in high school. I used to usher for the Rams and then go in to watch the last three quarters of the game at the old LA Coliseum. I was a devoted fan. But then they moved to Anaheim and then to St. Louis, and I kind of lost interest in them, even when they finally won the Super Bowl. And then a few years ago, they moved back to Los Angeles and made the Super Bowl again shortly thereafter. They lost. And now, this year, they've come back to the Super Bowl, and well, I guess I'm a fan again. Now, while my dad is not actually a football fan, he did grow up in Cincinnati, so rooting for the Bengals is appropriate, even if he may not have actually known the name of the NFL franchise until last weekend. I guess I'll say, go Rams, or b'hatzlacha elim, as you could say it in Hebrew. In a completely different direction this morning, and to play us in, here's our guest, Eleanor Risa, from her album Songs in the Key of Yiddish, singing Oh Mein Papa in Yiddish, an entirely appropriate selection, as you'll find out when we meet her soon, here on Too Jewish. That was Eleanor Risa singing Oh Mein Papa. Our guest this morning is Eleanor Risa, singer, Yiddish translator, actress, Tony-nominated director, playwright, and author of the new book, The Letters Project, which begins with an incredible story. You won't want to miss hearing about it when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish this morning. Our guest this morning, Eleanor Risa, is someone that I had known from her Yiddish singing, and I think I saw her on Broadway in the fantastic show Indecent a few years back. But she is a prominent author, playwright, actress, Tony-nominated director, I've missed a few things, translator, really an all-around performer in so many ways. She has a new book, it's fascinating, called The Letters Project, A Daughter's Journey, and we will talk to her right now. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning. Thanks so much, Rabbi Cohen.
So before we get into your book, I have to tell you, I've used your songs in the key of Yiddish from time to time here on Two Jewish over the years we've been running this show, and I saw you in Indecent, didn't recognize that it was the same person. Do you hear stories like that ever?
You know, I've been around the block a bunch of times, and I do so many different things that sometimes it's hard to connect the dots.
Connecting the dots is sort of what your new memoir is about. Tell us about the origin of the Letters Project.
Well, that's a really great way to describe it, as connecting the dots. My parents both lived through the Holocaust. My father in Auschwitz, my mother in Uzbekistan. And as a storyteller, which kind of is what everything I do seems to encompass, I always have thought about them and written about them in different ways. When my mother died in 1986, I discovered 56 letters from 1949 written in German by the guy who was to be my father. She'd never told me anything about them. I didn't know anything about them or why she kept them, because they were divorced. After all, he died in 1976. And as you mentioned, Indecent, the play by Paula Vogel, the year that I was in that show, which I think was 2018, it's hard to keep years straight.
I think it's 2017.
2017. Thank you so much.
Sure. Glad I could help you remember your life.
I could have used you earlier today. Because it seems like a minute ago, in fact.
Yeah,
say 2017. And
it's 5 years.
And, so it's a long time. But after doing Indecent, I decided for financial and creative reasons that it was time for me to have the letters translated. And that's, having the letters translated began the process of what was to become The Journey, which is what the book is about. The letters are the X marks the spot. The letters are my guidebook, my little Bible in a way. But the book itself is about a journey that I took following the letters to Germany, where I uncovered what I wasn't even, you know, more than I could have dreamed possible to uncover. And I learned more than I dreamed I would ever learn, because I thought, since both my parents were dead, there was nothing else to know. But in fact, there was a great deal about them, about the Holocaust, about myself.
It's an amazing story. It starts, in fact, you start your book with chicken bones. We'll talk about that. But it doesn't end there. It leads to, boy, an incredible series of revelations. We'll talk much more with Eleanor Risa when we come back this morning here on Two Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, A wonderful Jewish synagogue in Northwest Tucson in the Catalina foothills celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this winter. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has already created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. New Progressive Congregation in Northwest Tucson and the Foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for in-person Shabbat services every Friday night at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning at 10 a.m., or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome both members and guests in our sanctuary safely but in person. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Beit Simcha Synagogue is located at 2270 West Ina Road on the north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us in person Friday night and or Saturday morning. Come for Torah study at 9 a.m. or services at 10 a.m. Saturday. Email me, rabbi@beitsimchatucson.org, or go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We've got a lot of great stuff coming up, a Shabbat afternoon hike as well, coming up a week from, well, actually, this coming Saturday, and then a week from Saturday, our famous Rodeo Shabbat ride and afternoon service. Don't miss a horseback experience you can only get in Tucson. All of our classes are available in person and on Zoom. Adult Education Academy classes and our wonderful religious school in blended format, some students live, some on Zoom. For more information about Beit Simcha, to attend services, our religious school and Torah Tikes programs, bar and bat mitzvah, confirmation and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses, including Introductory Judaism, taught in person and on Zoom, and of course all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 276-5675, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing and most interesting Jewish congregation and community in all of Southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kfel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, twojewishradio.com, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store. Has very popular Jewish podcasts, top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine. Over 175,000 downloads on Podbean. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs. in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back a randomly occurring feature of Too Jewish, our Zen Judaism segment, Koans, or Koans of Wisdom, about our journey. Accept misfortune as a blessing. Do not wish for perfect health or a life without problems. What would you have to talk about? Do not let children play contact sports like football. These only lead to injuries and instill a violent, warlike nature. Encourage your child to play peaceful games like sports doctor. Zen Judaism, two koans, or koans of wisdom, on Too Jewish. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking about the counting of Jews, demography for Jewish communities. You mentioned last week that you'd said not too long ago that the third largest Jewish community in the world is probably France after Israel and the United States. But that's probably wrong if we count all the people who might be Jewish or who are kind of Jewish or are descended from Jews in places like Russia, Ukraine, kind of many parts of the former Soviet Union. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely right. And if we were to lump the whole former Soviet Union together, that entity, which for the moment at least is theoretical, would definitely have the largest Jewish community in the world, or maybe the second largest. Would certainly outplace France. The problem, as we started to say, is like survival in the former Soviet Union in many places depended on hiding any trace of your Jewish identity, and certain basic aspects of Jewish life were capital crimes. So I even know people here in Tucson who emigrated from the former Soviet Union with their parents when they were 10 or 12 years old, and they were never circumcised until they chose to be, like on the eve of their bar mitzvah or something, after coming here, because circumcision was a capital crime in the former Soviet Union. So a kid born in Moscow, even a kid born in like 1980, couldn't be circumcised under pain of death. It was literally a crime. So people learned to hide their Jewish identity, and in some cases to do without basic Jewish communal events, like celebrating holidays together, going to synagogue, having rabbis, having kosher food, all of that stuff, because participating in any part of that range of activities meant risking their jobs, their ability to go to a certain university. It meant sticking a label on their forehead, and that label was not advantageous.
The label was Yevrei, and they stamped it on their passports too.
Right. So now, to what degree has this changed? Well, first of all, with the outreach by international Jewish organizations like the JDC and Chabad and the World Jewish Congress and whatever, there's a whole range of activities in dozens of cities in Ukraine and probably hundreds of cities in the Russian Federation, which are in many cases small cities that we haven't heard of. I mean, I'm not talking about Kiev and Moscow and Odessa and St. Petersburg.
Where there are also, by the way, reform congregations in most of those larger cities, but not necessarily progressive congregations, but not in the smaller places.
Right. Well, so in these smaller places, people are still kind of coming out of hiding. And in many cases, it's elderly people driven by economic necessity because their pensions, which were based on their earnings in the Soviet period, are like $6 a month, and they would starve. And some of these are people who are Holocaust survivors. Some are just elderly Jews, but there's no reason for them to starve. So JDC and others have Meals on Wheels and really life-sustaining activities for Jewish communities that are growing, in the sense that more and more people are signing up for these services and coming to communal events. So accurate numbers, I mean, theoretically, in Kyiv today, there's 30,000 Jews. I've heard estimates from local Jewish figures, Jewish activists, whatever, that the real number is as high as 600,000.
Wow.
Which is 20 times more. But that's if you count somebody who has, you know, a Jewish grandparent, or maybe a Jewish father and not a Jewish mother.
Sure.
Or, you know, sort of two or three generations that have not been active in the Jewish community, but that are suddenly becoming engaged.
It's fascinating and complicated question, and it's nice to know that there's more Jews out there than we think, but it's it will remain, I think, a complicated question for a while. Thanks so much, Tom. We'll talk next week.
Looking forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. There's a knock at the door of the rabbi's study. "Why, Mr. Jaffe," the rabbi says, opening the door. "Come on in. What can I do for you?" "Rabbi, I'm very depressed. You see, my father died 3 weeks ago," Jaffe starts. I know," responds the rabbi. "I performed his funeral. I saw you at the Shiva Minions, too. Do you want to talk about your loss?" "No," answers Jaffe. I've gotten over it pretty well, and frankly, we weren't that close. And he left me $6 million in his will." "Wow," says the rabbi. "Still, you seem quite down. What's wrong?" "Well," Jaffe continues, "2 weeks ago, my uncle died unexpectedly," and he sighs. "I see," said the rabbi. "So his dying has left you depressed?" "No, not really. We weren't close at all. But he left me $3 million. "My goodness," says the rabbi, "but you seem terribly depressed." "Well, rabbi, next thing you know, last week, my great aunt died." "Oy, all that loss must be terrible for you, Mr. Jaffe," says the rabbi. "Actually, rabbi, I hadn't seen her in many years. She lived in France. I didn't know her. And still, she left me $2 million in her will." "Well, Mr. Jaffe, then I'm a bit at a loss as to why you seem so totally down and depressed. What's going on?" "Well, rabbi, if you must know," says Jaffe, "so far this week, nothing." That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well, and maybe get something. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the traumatic Torah portion of Ki Tisa, the story of the golden calf. While Moses is up on Mount Sinai receiving the Ten Commandments, the Israelites start to worry that he's not coming back. And so while God is carving the words, "You shall have no other gods besides me, nor make any image of them," into a stone tablet, the faithless Israelite people persuade Moses' brother Aaron to make them an idol of gold, a calf, that they can call their new god. Pleased with the result, they worship it and then throw a big party, a bacchanal, a carnival, Mardi Gras in the Sinai. Coming down the mountain, Joshua and Moses hear the noise from the camp below. Joshua is astonished. He thinks it must be the sound of battle. But Moses knows what a party sounds like. And when Moses sees all the cavorting below and the newly chosen people worshiping a golden idol, he throws down the sacred stone tablets of the commandments, shattering them. The music and dancing stop. It is a shocking scene. For the rabbis, this is one of the most dramatic and distressing portions in the whole Torah. The problem is acute. According to the text, our people witnessed the divine power of the 10 plagues, were personally saved on the shore of the Sea of Reeds by God, received the direct revelation at Sinai, in short, experienced God more directly than any other group in history ever has, and almost immediately after turned around and rejected God to worship a cow made out of their own jewelry. In Rabbinic Midrash, this week's events are called the Ma'aseh Ha'egel, the awful story of the calf. How can a people, given such a clear set of signs and wonders, including direct revelation and verbal command, only follow the true God for 40 days before pursuing such a ridiculous substitute? The answer lies in our own makeup. We enjoy spectacle, are impressed by it, even awed by it. But as soon as it's gone, its effects linger a very short time indeed. What makes us tick as human beings, what keeps us in line, is the very dailiness of regular rules and schedules, the kinds of laws and rituals that are very much a part of practical Judaism. We need both ritual and structure. And until these are provided in a coherent way, we tend to flounder, even disastrously so, as we did at the time of the golden calf. Without a way to connect to God regularly, without prayer services and a personal commitment to actually doing mitzvot each day, we quickly lose our ability to be holy. We instead chase gold or idols or both. We become obsessed with our own pursuits, chase our own idols of gold. We need more than grand ideas or sweeping spirituality. We need religion and a Jewish grounding in practice and experience, or we won't be able to remain ethical. Without that, we start to worship golden calves of every kind. At the end of Ki Tisa, there's a denouement to this painful story of spiritual failure, providing a kind of limited redemption. Moses goes back up Mount Sinai and brings down another set of tablets, and then he asks God to reveal God's own essence to him. Moses doesn't get exactly what he wants, but he is provided the privilege of experiencing God's passing presence. And then Moses, too, must continue to try to sense that presence every day thereafter. In other words, even Moses, the best of us, the person closest to God, continually has to seek God's presence. How much more so is that true for the rest of us Jews today, we modern-day Israelites? In spite of our failures of both faith and action, if we nonetheless continue to find God, we too will be blessed with the touch of that sacred divine presence. We too may find holiness. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Eleanor Risa, actress, singer, playwright, translator, and author, explains why she began the Letters Project, what she discovered when she pieced together the letters her father had written her mother, tracing an extraordinary story of her parents' lives that she had never known. Find out all about it when we come back in a moment, here on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world, with commentary.
Todd Gitlin died last week. One of the archetypal 60s student radicals, Gitlin, a Jewish kid from New York, led the Students for a Democratic Society, the SDS, in 1963 and 64 when he was a Harvard graduate and a grad student at Michigan. The SDS protested the Vietnam War and apartheid and staged sit-ins and protests throughout the decade. Todd Gitlin himself helped organize the first mass protest of the Vietnam War in America and the first mass protest of South Africa's apartheid regime. Gitlin went on to get his PhD from UC Berkeley, taught at San Jose State, UC Santa Cruz, Berkeley, NYU, and eventually Columbia University. Gitlin once said he did not plan a career outside of radicalism, but he settled into being a chronicler of a time that shaped the country. He wrote 16 books and hundreds of articles, both scholarly and popular. His best-known work, The 60s, Years of Hope, Days of Rage, was published in 1987, but it was a line in another book of his, written in 1995, The Twilight of Common Dreams, Why America is Racked by Culture War, that best came to define him. While the right has been busy taking the White House, the left has been marching on the English department. Gitlin believed that the identity politics of the left obscured the larger societal inequities of American systems. He was also a rare figure on the left who decried calling Israel apartheid and opposed the BDS movement. Todd Gitlin was appalled at likening Israel's practices to South African apartheid. As a pioneer of the protests against that system of racial segregation in the 1960s, he said there are two competing rights to the land in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, so BDS doesn't make any sense. He allied with conservative Bill Kristol, also Jewish, of course, in working to reverse the changes that Donald Trump and Trumpism brought to America. Todd Gitlin was a brilliant, prolific observer and author of change in a long chain of Jewish thinkers and actors in history. May his memory be a blessing. Police in Orange County, Florida, arrested three men accused of violence and theft during the neo-Nazi rally in Orlando that made national headlines last week. The neo-Nazis were identified as Joshua Terrell, Jason Brown, and Bert Colucci, all between 45 and 47 years of age. Terrell and Colucci are charged with battery, but officials said that charge could later be elevated to a hate crime. Brown is charged with theft. The rally, January 29th at an overpass in Orlando, drew about 20 people identifying with the neo-Nazis. They shouted slurs at passersby. The arrests appear to be related to a pepper spray attack on a Jewish man who approached the neo-Nazis after one of them spat into the sunroof of his car. The man got out of his car and identified himself as Jewish, and the neo-Nazis pepper sprayed and punched him and knocked the phone from his hand. And in other news, perhaps even more disturbingly, a musical about a Philadelphia area rabbi who contracted to have his wife murdered in 1994 is stirring painful memories among his former congregants. The Geffen Playhouse in L.A. is set to debut A Wicked Soul in Cherry Hill about Rabbi Fred Neulander, convicted in 2001 for hiring a man to bludgeon his wife Carol to death. Neulander, believed at the time to be the first rabbi ever tried in the United States for murder, was convicted after a second trial in 2001 and is serving 30 years to life. The case drew national headlines. His trial was broadcast on Court TV. A number of the songs in the musical were posted on social media and then taken down recently. The Geffen Playhouse describes the musical as written with humor and chutzpah by Matt Schatz, who grew up in the South Jersey community of Cherry Hill, where Neulander lived and worked. Schatz, an established playwright, said it was his job as an artist to ask questions. The rabbi was telling people how to be a person, how to be a Jew, and he turned out to be evil, said Schatz. How do we reckon with that? However, a number of congregants of Makor Shalom in Cherry Hill, which Neulander founded in 1974, said they did not think the time was ripe yet for a musical. The congregation's president, Drew Malotsky, himself a musical theater director, suggested the musical was by definition exploitative. We know nothing about the content of the play, he said. This is our history. It involves our friends and our community. It is very serious to us. To make light of it or exploit it for entertainment value is not something we will ever condone. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Eleanor Risa is, by the way, a wonderful Yiddish singer, performer, actress, playwright, not, of course, just in Yiddish, but in English as well. Her new book is called The Letters Project, and it's a fascinating exploration of her family's history in a series of letters that were contained in an old leather pocketbook. Just the way you describe that purse is so loving and interesting in the book. But really, of course, it's the letters themselves. This is like a kind of a shock to you, right? These letters?
Yeah, the letters were a shock.
You mentioned like what you showed about your father, whom you feel like you really didn't know, and then suddenly his whole experience opens up to you.
Yeah, I mean, my father was 50 when I was born, so, and then he died 22 years later. And so if you think about it, which I didn't really until this book, I knew my father for 22 years, for one-third of his life, meaning that for two-thirds, I had no idea really who he was. And as someone who was living in Germany in the 20s, 30s, and then captive by the Nazis in the 40s, and there was a lot for me not to have known about. So this book gave me an opportunity to learn about him, because in fact I found documents that were unexpected testimony at different agencies in Germany, that people who I did not even know or did not know well had accessed for me. And these testimonies, one from 1947, if you can believe that, 2 years after my father
was liberated.
I won't say was liberated from Auschwitz. I will say fled from Auschwitz,
right,
and lived through the death march,
right,
appropriately named. And he was one of the few people, one of the few Jews who returned to Stuttgart. And the government at that time wanted to know who the little Nazis were. They knew who the big Nazis were, but they wanted to know who, you know, the postman or the butcher or the baker or the teacher. Or and so people who survived gave testimony, and that was one of the things, for example, I mean, that I found.
This translation project was not straightforward either,
right,
to say the least. That must have been challenging, right?
Yes. I'm a fairly disorganized person. And believe it or not, I mean, I found it difficult to find people to translate. I mean, one might say, well, first of all, what took you so long? Because I found the letters in 1986. And didn't have them translated until 2017, 2018, 30 years. So first of all, that was, and it's expensive, and who's going to do it? You can try going to a professional. And these letters were thick. I mean, they were legal-sized documents with writing fit into every little corner and crevice of the paper. My father seemed to have a lot he wanted to say, and I couldn't read anything except for the salutation, which looked like it was written in Yiddish, which I do understand and read slowly. There was so much I didn't know, and eventually I found out that the letters were indeed in German, and eventually I ran into someone that I knew, another performer, an expat, and asked him if he would be interested in translating.
Right.
I mean, and he of course was not, but his fiance or girlfriend was a translator, so she became a translator. Then my therapist, book club mate, and hairdresser also became
a translator. Right.
Yeah. So it was, and then in terms of keeping straight who had which papers, and at one point I wound up translating the same document twice because unintentionally. Because I kind of lost track of who was doing what.
What was the greatest surprise in these letters when you finally had them translated?
I would say the greatest surprise was the need and fear that I could read, and desperation that I could read in my father's letters, his longing, his poetic. I mean, my father in America was a sweatshop worker, spoke bad English. I don't know what his reading skills were, frankly. That's who I knew. I knew a guy that didn't speak English well, that looked like a greener, an immigrant.
A new immigrant,
always,
yeah.
Always. And so in these letters, he says beautiful, poetic things to my mother. He says, I would fly, because she had gotten her visa to America, and he was still stuck in Germany. And in one letter, he says, I would fly to you if I only had wings. And I think to myself, Who said that? Who wrote those words? The guy that I knew? No, not the guy that I knew. My father was another guy. He was a different guy. I didn't know him. I didn't know the man who wrote those letters, who would later become my father. So I guess there was nothing but surprises in those letters. Who he was, his need for my mother, his disappointment that she didn't write often enough. He was all alone, you know. He was all alone, and his life in Germany was ending, and she had her life beginning in America. So it was just one of those things that where two people, best intentions, are not exactly on the same page in more ways than one.
I want to talk about how you begin the book. You describe how you had a science project in school when you were a kid. You told everybody to save their chicken bones. You were going to build a dinosaur like in the Natural History Museum, or maybe a chicken out of bones. Tell us the analogy to this story.
Well, frankly, I didn't really know there would be an analogy to the story. It just seemed that it felt like that. This project, the chicken bone story, it was my imagination, not my intellect, that triggered my science project to create like a dinosaur out of chicken bones, without doing any research, without doing any real homework. It was just an idea. And this book was that as well. I mean, here were these letters that were being translated, and they took months and months. I mean, they took a long time for them all to get translated. And the plan was like the chicken bones. I was just going to get the letters translated. And then one of the translators offered me an opportunity to travel with her to Stuttgart, where my father was living, and to Ulm, where my mother was living, both of them after the war. And I said, oh, okay. I mean, I didn't really say, oh, okay. I said, really? Who's going to pay for this? Really? Is there any point in my going? Why should I waste my time? Why should I bother? But my imagination, again, just said, well, maybe you can make something out of this. Maybe you can make a dinosaur out of these letters. You can create something out of nothing. And so went every step of this journey. Every step of this process was like, oh, okay, I'll try that. I didn't do any homework on it, but I'll try it. And it kind of miraculously fell into place. One step led to another step, led to another step, and it turned out better than the chicken bone project, actually, thankfully.
Well, I think you have done more than turn it into a chicken. I don't know if it's a dinosaur, but it's a fascinating story. I will say it's got a lot of you in it, as well as your father, of course, and your parents. And it's a really interesting journey. The book is called The Letters Project. Where can people go to find out more about you, Eleanor?
Well, you can go to my website, which is eleanorrisa.com. The book is available on hardcover or Kindle ebooks or even Audible, and I do the Audible narration of my own book, which I'm really so pleased about. And otherwise, you know, wherever people buy books is where they can get them. And you can always Google me. It's been a really long, blessed career life I've had. So there's a lot. There's some music on YouTube. There's readings and all sorts of things.
It's all good and fascinating, and highly recommend the music as well. I want to thank Eleanor Risa for a great visit here on Too Jewish. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. It's been a pleasure.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pasquayaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Mati Lazar, the outstanding conductor, arranger, composer, and recording artist, winner of the 2021 Kohan Memorial Foundation Award for his tremendous contributions to Jewish music around the world through the Zamir Choral Foundation. He will be right here in Tucson at Congregation Beit Simcha Friday night, March 4th, to receive the award. And don't forget, you can join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat starting at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org for more information to hear about our Shabbat afternoon hike and service and our Shabbat horseback ride and mincha service coming up in another couple weeks. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from our guest this morning, Eleanor Risa, and it's her medley of Molly Pecan songs. My friends, may you have a healthy week. God willing, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week we pray of peace and go Rams.
Also, ich rief mir bei Rinsenstädtel große Menschen, kleine Kinder laufen noch auf Fäse, wenn der Wenn man sieht, noch schreit, noch verkauft. Oh, oh, ich rieb, gelehrt im Rebens. Ich bin geruten in mein Bobezettel. Große Menschen, kleine Kinder laufen noch auf Fäse, wenn der Wenn man sieht, noch schreit, noch verkauft. Gewollt und gewollt, oi was wollt ich denn nicht gewollt? Ich wollt gewollt und gewollt, gewollt und gewollt.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.